Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Straight Popcorn Podcast. My name is Al Nichols.
And I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
And we got some updates real fast at the top of the podcast here. Brock, do you want to fill us in?
Yes, we don't know what next week's going to look like. It could be a bonus podcast. It could be dead air. It could be a regular schedule podcast because next week I move. And it's been a pretty crazy month. We've done a lot of remodeling. And there's remodeling that's carrying on into the next week with the move. So I really have no idea what to expect.
So basically what he's saying is his living situation is far more important than your entertainment needs, and he has to have a little bit of time to go primp his home a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying, Gal.
Didn't mean to throw you under the bus or anything, of course.
Dude, you not only threw me under the bus backed over me one more time.
No, there's going to be something next week. We're not sure what it may be, and it may be very short, but, you know, we're trying here just to keep you, giving you a great content and stuff like that. However, this was such a crazy news week. It would be hard to imagine that there'd be any other news to compile on top of all of this. It feels like it's just... It feels like a volcano at this point has blown, and it has to stop at some point.
Said the porn star with a really happy ending. But no, seriously, let's talk about throwing things under the bus. So Warner Brothers released a new name
for the new
Batman and Superman film, and that is going to be called Batman versus Superman. Dawn of Justice.
Which almost sounds kind of like, who was the guy who did Charles Bronson? That sounds like a Charles Bronson film, Dawn of Justice.
Or Steven Seagal.
Ooh,
which
yes.
We need to have that movie, Bronson versus Seagal, Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, lots of roundhouse kicks and giant ass Colt 45s.
and pretend sheriffs.
Yeah.
Oh, nobody wants to see that.
Well, it's pretty cool. I'm glad they announced the title, but you said it right earlier. I wish they had called this World's Finest.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot more sense because there is an already existing comic book called World's Finest that features Batman and Superman. But I also think at the same time, it's a marketing thing. I mean, you can put Batman versus Superman. People are like, yeah, let's get it. You put World's Finest... Downtown Abbey.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they're also trying to put the... they're also trying to prepare the base for the Justice League film, which is going to follow. So I'm sure they were feeling a little bit of pressure, like, we have to include the word justice in there somewhere. So they know that this is leading to a league of some sorts.
Yeah, like a football, fantasy football league? Is that what you're getting that out?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are the Justice League.
So they revealed the logo as well, which actually doesn't look much different than what they did at Comic-Con.
It doesn't look much different from I Am Legend.
Ooh, you know what? You're absolutely right. The one that was on the billboard.
Right.
It's happening. It's happening, Brock.
Films are predicting the future.
Will Smith will be the only survivor in the apocalypse to come.
Says L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah. Oh, man. But there was another thing that we've been really wanting to talk about. We almost were like, do we do another podcast this week? Because it came out last week, but we've had to wait till now to talk about it. So, guys, they didn't just show us the Batmobile. You know, apparently Batman was sitting under the tarp all night long. And when they pulled it back, he popped up and he was kind of sad. But we got the first glimpse of sad Batman next to his brand new Batmobile in the upcoming movie. What were your first reactions to the costume?
I thought it was amazing. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's dead on. And if any of the film has as much substance as that outfit,
yeah,
we'll be doing good.
Yeah, it's Kevin Smith was right. It really just came straight out of The Dark Knight Returns, book three. That's what he was saying anyway on his own podcast on Hollywood Babylon. But, you know, people were taking that like maybe the suit was blue and gray then. And I don't think that's what that means. I think, if anything, maybe it has like a bluish tint when it's hit by the right light or something like that. But I can't imagine they do a blue and gray suit for the film. It's actually kind of amazing that they're doing a blue and gray suit for the film, because it's always been all black in every single adaptation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining it to turn out more gray and black.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I guess we'll see how they pull that off.
Yeah, well, it does look really cool. I really like the... it seemed like there was like a really subtle like lattice structure in the suit. You know, did you notice that?
No.
Well, it's just like... It's not just like a simple suit, you know? It actually had like a small pattern in it, you know? But it was different than what you typically see. You know, like a lot of suits look like they're made out of basketball material or whatever. You know, this actually looked like it was kind of like a mesh of some sort. So that was intriguing, and I definitely liked the symbol. A big departure, especially for the cowl, for the mask and everything like that, because the horns weren't huge. They were just, you know, Frank Miller horns. So I was like, wow, really cool. So I was digging that.
Yeah, and I mean, he said at one point, you know, Zack Snyder wanted to really adapt Dark Knight Returns, so I guess this is his legitimate way of doing it.
Yeah, well, at Comic-Con, he had, I don't remember the actor's name, but when they did the announcement, it was a line from Dark Knight Returns when Batman is talking to Clark about, you know, power and everything like that, so it seems that this actually may be happening. It may be really going in that direction.
I just can't wait. Yeah. I think this may actually be better than people are expecting.
Well, you know, I have noticed that since this announcement, since this photo came out, rather, a lot of the naysayers, a lot of the people complaining about Affleck and everything like that, they've kind of quieted down. Not to say completely gone away, that won't happen, but, you know, I think people are impressed with what they're seeing, so I think that's a great thing, and I'm happy about it.
He was the bomb in Phantoms, you.
Yo.
Had to do it, sir.
Yep.
So with that, that wraps up our information on Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and on to other things that we repeat on a weekly basis. We got our first look at the Star Wars Episode 7.
Yes, we did, thanks to a UNICEF commercial.
Good old UNICEF coming through at the last second.
Well, technically it was J.J. Abrams doing an ad, because they're doing a contest right now about giving to UNICEF. And if you do that, I think it's like $10 to contribute, and you get your name entered into a drawing, and you may be, you know, one of the lucky people selected to go to the set of Star Wars Episode 7, and you will be a part of the film. They will put you into costume and makeup, and you will be a VIP guest of J.J. Abrams. It's a pretty exciting thing, and they showed, like, of course they showed the little animatronic creature running around with the big basket on his back.
Full of chickens.
Yeah, like something.
Yeah, like, I don't know, it's reminding me of chickens.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that be awesome if you won the contest and they put you in a suit of Jar Jar Binks and they waterboarded you? I mean, that would be a shitty way to go out on that contest, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, I would still probably be okay with it, because it would be a scene where Jar Jar Binks is being waterboarded.
But some poor bastard's in the suit. I mean, that's...
But, you know, there's a cost to be paid in certain situations like that, and that fucking thing definitely deserves it.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, the set looks pretty cool. It's not... anything that I didn't expect, though, you know, it's Tatooine. It doesn't look like the Tatooine set from when they did Mos Espa in Phantom Menace, but it still has that vibe to it, so I was like, cool.
I think a lot of that video was due to the fact that, like, Abrams wanted to put his money where his mouth was,
mm-hmm.
and because in the video it shows a puppet.
Yeah.
So I think that was, like, his way of, like, hey, guys... it's in the right hands.
Right. We're doing this right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of the marketing strategy outside of the charity thing that they were trying to do is drill home to the naysayers that this is actually going to be a different Star Wars this time.
Yeah, and I'm excited about that. It's just, you know, everything I've heard from this film and now everything that I'm beginning to see just makes my heart just grow so much fonder of what they're doing with this whole thing. So it's great. So, Hugh Jackman. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about X-Men now. Not a lot, but it does come out this Friday, this weekend. Brock won't be seeing it because he'll be carefully attending his new home and trying to get that ready to move into. But
just pour the alcohol on the wounds.
But anyway, I'm going to a very early showing tomorrow night of the new X-Men First Class, not First Class, but X-Men Days of Future Past. You know, I will be going to see that.
And which he'll probably text me after it's over and tell me how awesome it is.
Yeah, or maybe how awful it is.
I don't get to make my own decisions, Al.
No. Yeah, I did the same thing after Godzilla.
Totally because of Al, I am no longer interested in seeing Godzilla.
Which, honestly, maybe you do still want to go see it because I've read so many people say such great things about it and I don't understand it, but again, I've not ever really been a huge Godzilla fan, you know, so that's the other thing. So, I don't know. I was underwhelmed, clearly, but, you know, I think people should make their own decisions on that. But anyway, so going back to X-Men here, Hugh Jackman still wants to keep playing Wolverine after all. Maybe. He maybe wants to come back to the role. Which basically means that he wants some more money.
Yeah, usually. I'm honestly ready to see someone else play Wolverine.
Well, he did a little talk. I was reading it, I think, on Nerdist's website, but he was talking about, like, he really wants to be a part of the Avengers films and stuff like that and wants to battle the Hulk. I'm like, I'd be down for that. That would definitely be something that they never really showed with him in the X-Men films. But, yeah, I think at this point, I don't know, he'll probably end up doing the next few X-Men films, and he may do an Old Man Logan-type film, and that might be it. So, I guess we'll see, but, I mean, I have loved him in the role. We've talked about this already before, so I don't think we need to go back into it, but I don't know. I'm excited to see him in this new film, at least, and he'll probably end up being the main star of it.
I think a lot of my problem is not him in the role, because I actually like Hugh Jackman.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of it is that I won't know that they're rebooting it until they let go of Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And that's always been my thing. Because I love the Wolverine. Now, Wolverine Origins, another story. but the Wolverine was awesome. And I thought he was great. And the official idea of them moving on to a different approach to the series will not be verified to me until he's gone.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think they're still talking about, you know, Apocalypse news and stuff like that. But I think a lot of things are still weighing on how well this film does. Like, even though they've greenlit the project, that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, they can close it down just as quickly. So I'll be curious to see what ends up happening. I know Fox has definitely made a stand that they won't be mixing the X-Men films with the Fantastic Four films and all of that. I don't know. I don't see a future with this series. I see it kind of puttering out. In fact, I think it kind of already puttered out by the time they did X-Men 3, you know, whatever the hell, the Last Stand. You know, even the title said it all. It was like, we're kind of done with this, you know, and these people don't really want to come back to the roles. We've mutilated these characters. I don't even know how you bring back a lot of these characters now because they're so mishmashed, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I am still looking forward to seeing it. I think it is tomorrow night. But you know, I guess it's just a wait and see kind of moment. You know, see how they come up with the story and how it develops. So,
do you think that start of the meeting for when they first pitched the storyline for The Last Stand was a producer or writer walking into the room going, "We made this story for fans of Mutant Diarrhea."
Oh, I don't know what happened in that meeting. All I can imagine is lots of people, on lots of cocaine.
Lots of cocaine and Brett Ratner screaming, la 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 la.
Yeah, and that Olivia Munn, she does it a bitch, you know, just she didn't like, you know, because I didn't put her in some movie or something.
Yeah. Olivia Munn eating shrimp.
As he masturbated.
Brett Ratner eating shrimp, sorry.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Olivia Munn, former co-host on Attack of the Show, now doing Newsroom and has done a bunch of other stuff since, but she wrote a book years back called Suck It, Wonder Woman, and she talks about, and it's not initially revealed, she doesn't mention his name, even though about maybe 9 months later, he ends up talking to Kevin Pereira on Attack of the Show and saying, yeah, it's me. Which I didn't get why he wanted to do that. And he made a bigger ass of himself. But, you know, he did some weird things with Olivia Munn. He's like, oh, it's not all true. It's me that she's depicting, but none of it's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Brett, you know, we talked about this. I think Brett Ratner gets a shittier shake than he deserves. But, yeah, I mean, he's in Hollywood. He's got a lot of money. He's probably had sex with, like, 50 Playboy bunnies. Yeah. I mean, what's the guy going to do but have sex in each room? I mean, you gotta get your rocks off somewhere. You got to start being inventive. You know, like throw a snow cone at my ass. You know, I mean, those things happen in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
You live in L.A., you know.
Yeah, all the time. Just everyone,
I mean, you know you off on street corners, like throw a snow cone at my ass. I mean, who does it in LA? I mean, that's what you do.
Happens every morning when I go to McDonald's.
Sweet.
All right. Well, I guess that's X-Men news.
And for some, I don't know why this is even at the top of the hour. This honestly should be in. What? But the Omen TV series is happening from former Walking Dead showrunner. I mean, that whole sentence right there is full of bell.
Okay, so the former showrunner, is he the, like, I don't really know anything about Walking Dead. I know you're not a big fan of it anymore. Like, okay, so when the showrunner was on board Walking Dead, was it like the first season?
See, that's the question now. How many showrunners has that show had at this point? I mean, but I'm trying to understand this whole, like, let's turn horror film franchises into TV series now. Because we have officially Bates Motel, Scream is going to be a TV series, ugh, Friday the 13th, and now this shit.
Well, Hannibal too, but Hannibal's in a different
league. Yeah, but that, you know, that's smart. I mean, that's always been kind of little smarter than the rest of these properties.
Well, the biggest difference too, though, is that with Hannibal, there were numerous books written. You know,
right.
Like, there actually is material. With Bates Motel, not really. There was one story about Norman Bates and about his creepy mother thing going on and the hotel and stuff like that and all the murders he committed. So there was a book about that, but there wasn't anything beyond that.
And even there was? Yeah, I didn't want to be the bubble burster on that one because it kind of saddens me to even bring it up. Mm-hmm. But there were four more after the first one.
Really? Were, yes. Movies or stories? Actual books?
Movies. Movies.
Okay, but not books, though.
Right.
Okay, but, that's what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, I know there were more movies. But actually, the material where this stuff comes from, like with Hannibal, you actually did have a lot of material, like, written that inspired the films and now has inspired the television show. But with The Omen, I don't see that. Like, do we really want to follow the journey of some kid who's going to grow up to be the Antichrist? One movie, maybe, but, like, and they've done so many at this point. I don't see this being good.
Yeah, I don't either. And I guess we'll see. I mean, Rosemary's Baby just had a miniseries, or it has a miniseries coming up, which I don't understand why you would want to remake that.
Yeah.
But speaking of remakes, we also are getting Stephen King's It adaptation, and it is getting made by New Line Cinema.
Well, I know that clown creeped me the fuck out. Still does to this day. But
Pennywise, he's a cute clown.
Yeah. Till you get an email in the middle of the night.
Right. Or you're walking by a drain, you know.
And I mentioned that because there was actually one night it was at 4 a.m. and I got an anonymous email from someone I didn't know, opened it up, all it was a giant-ass picture of Pennywise on my screen, flipped me the fuck out.
Yeah, that was a really creepy movie. And this is what I understand about this. Like, when they originally did Stephen King's It, they did it as a mini series condensed into like a 2- and 20-minute film, I think.
Okay.
It was made for ABC at the time. So, of course, it's, you know, ABC being owned by Disney, it was pretty watered down in comparison to what the book was. So the next step of evolution for that, I would think, would be, hey, HBO, let's do an It adaptation.
Yeah.
So, sorry, didn't mean to cough in the microphone, guys. So now they're going to go make a 2-hour film on a property that everybody's been sitting on since the 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they could do better with that personally, but
yeah, it seems like an odd choice, but that's what they're going to do. It's a horror property, so they have the opportunity to make money on it. I mean, I have one question though for you. Do you ever think Stephen King sits down and is just watching TV in the afternoon, comes across some of his properties and just like, "Who the fuck made this?"
Yeah, I can tell you one right now, The Shining. Because he hates The Shining, dude.
Well, actually, I was coming from the point of view like, man, I was doing so many drugs back then, I don't even remember what the hell I did.
Yeah, I do. The Shining. Seriously, oh, man. That was the book he wrote when he got sober about his alcoholism.
Oh, okay.
And so that whole book, when you read it, it plays out like Stephen King confessing his demons.
Okay, and that you're talking about the Kubrick film, right?
Yeah, well, the book is what I'm talking about now, but like that's why he hates Kubrick's version because it doesn't really explore that the way the book does. So he went, you know, he had a thorn in his side about that, and then he made that wonderful turd of The Shining remake on ABC. Who thought that was a good idea? I have no idea. And it had Captain Dan in it.
Oh, man.
Fucking Stephen King, man.
All right. Well, time to move on to the next subject. And I'm excited to talk about this because we've been anxiously awaiting the premiere. And fortunately, AMC went ahead and decided to go ahead and run the pilot episode on their website. We are talking about Halt and Catch Fire, the new AMC original series coming out here on June 1st, if I'm not mistaken. So both of us already saw it. Now we're going to talk a little bit about what we saw. So if you haven't seen it yet, I would say skip ahead in the podcast, maybe 5 to 10 minutes. We're going to be covering it here. So I'm going to let you start, sir.
So I did not know what to expect from this because there's already kind of a similar concept in the show Silicon Valley. I just knew it was going to be a drama take. But AMC, they failed a couple of times. So I kind of went in with low expectations because some of the other shows that they've been hyping up, let's be honest, haven't really panned out in a lot of ways.
Low Winter Sun.
Right.
Klondike. No, not Klondike. The other one. Anyway, go ahead.
But you know what? This is the first time that I walked into a TV show and I was like, you know, my standards have been like way up here, or my expectations were way up here. This show still wouldn't have disappointed me.
Yeah.
I mean, give you the basic idea of the show, spoiler alert. It's about a guy that gets a job working for a small computer firm. Yeah, and when I say small, smaller than IBM or Apple. And he meets up with this engineer that wrote this legendary article in kind of a nerd magazine called Byte. And when he meets him, he shows him the magazine. He's like, "I know you're great." He remembered this other thing that he had made. And he convinces him to backwards engineer an IBM computer.
highly illegal.
Very highly illegal. Because at the time when they made computers, they were making them for accounting.
Yeah.
And this guy has a vision of something bigger, which I'm going to guess is what we're looking at right now. But the characters in this show, like, it just sounds like a real basic story, but it really isn't, because the guy that convinces him is probably one of the most unique, charismatic characters I've seen on TV in a long time.
Yeah, and I think it's played by Lee Pace.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was really floored by that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was, like, really unique. There's some dark stuff going on and over on that show with him, but it's not, like, in your face.
Mm-hmm.
It's just real subtle. It really works. The guy that he convinces is a really unique backstory with his wife that I just loved.
Mm-hmm.
About them both being, like, engineers.
Right.
And having a family and trying it over and over again. And I love that aspect. But there is one person I left out of this whole thing, which is who becomes, I wouldn't call her scapegoat because she's voluntarily doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the apprentice, so to speak, who has ended up, in my opinion, being the strongest female character on TV in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
What'd you think?
Everything about this show, everything about it, immediately within the first minute, totally had me on board. It had the right vibe. Like, I'm a big fan of, you know, there was a film that came out a couple of years ago called Beyond the Black Rainbow. And I wouldn't necessarily call that a great film, but I love the vibe of that film. You know, totally felt like the 80s, but kind of had an interesting vibe to it, kind of like a thriller. You know, This show actually has that vibe as well. With the main character, he seems a little bit unpredictable, and he has this plan in place. And, you know, it ends up unfolding out through the episode, and there's some pretty crazy moments where all of a sudden, you know, the guy is doing, you know, like he makes a move here, and then he ends up calling at one point, again, spoiler alert, he ends up calling IBM and letting them know what he's up to. This illegal thing of breaking in, because they're basically breaking into the BIOS of this IBM machine and figuring out, like, what its base code is. You know, you're not supposed to do that. You're not even supposed to know where it's located on the damn thing. But they figure it all out, and it's just so intriguing, because now I want to know, why is he doing this? What kind of personal grudge does he have with IBM or whatever it may be? You know, is he just a visionary who sees the future, or is this like a vendetta? And, then of course, as you said, the family guy, you know, the guy with his wife and kids, and, you know, he's dealing with this massive depression because he feels like his life is wasting away. His one dream that he went after is no more. And now he's working for the big corporate machine like Cardiff Electrics. And it's just, you know, it's nothing to him. He has no value anymore as a person. He can't see the importance in his life. But the relationship between is, like, I immediately adored his wife, you know, like, totally understood what she was going through, and understood the guy as well. And I it was so interesting. Like, I don't know, I've not watched a show like that in a long time. You know, and usually pylons aren't the strongest episodes. You know, they're just like a taste, and they try to force a lot in there to give you, like, an impression of what the show is. This wasn't that. You know, this felt, like I told you I told you the other day, but it's like Pirates of Silicon Valley. Not the show Silicon Valley, but the 90s film with Noah Wiley and Michael Anthony Hall. Not Michael Anthony Hall, Michael, whatever his name is, who was in Pretty in Pink and Breakfast Club. But anyway, you know, it has that kind of vibe to it. Like, there's something going on, you know, like some backbiting kind of thing, or I don't know. But and you're absolutely right, of course, with the strong female character as well. I found her really intriguing, you know, someone who's in school, who's really bright, and like, kind of saw the, you know, could see the future of where computers are going with interlinking and stuff like that at that time. So I don't know where the show's going to end up going, but I'm so happy to be a part of that ride.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really cool elements. So, I mean, the show's a huge character study. There's definitely a thriller vibe about it. Like, it is not predictable in any way. The characters aren't what you expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, the show works. Like, I think this honestly is going to be up there with Breaking Bad and Mad Men for AMC. I really do.
Well, you know, since Mad Men is on its way out, final season, even though technically it doesn't end till next year, and that they've lost Breaking Bad, and, you know, you would think at this point that they would be grasping at straws, and there would be a lot of misses now, you know, that, like, and you know, like you said, there have been, you know, but I wasn't expecting this, and this may be one of their greatest shows yet.
And by the way, just a side note, the opening credits are phenomenal.
Oh, man, I wanted to talk about
that. It's a piece of art.
Yeah, and the music. I love, like, that 80s type of electronic music. That, like, the synthesizer music.
It's complete craft work. I mean, it's just so cool.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of this show, man. Like, I hate that, like, June 1st is going to be a repeat of the first episode, which I'm going to watch again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because I want to see it in high def. But,
well, I also want to support it. I want them to know that people are watching. Yeah.
But I'm just, like, so stoked for the second episode.
Yeah.
Because they did such a good pilot. Like, this is one of the better pilots I've seen.
Yeah. And I can't imagine really what's going to happen on this show, too. And I think with a lot of pilots, you kind of get this vibe of where they're going. With this one, you could make those predictions, but are you going to be right? You know, like, and then I kind of like that. I like not knowing where it's going to take me.
Yeah, and this is definitely that show. And I mean, like when it dropped off at the end, and I'm not going to tell anybody what the end is, but just the way it went into credits was like the most unique thing I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's like droning and eerie and just really fucking cool.
Man, I mean, you may not get that on television, unfortunately. Because a lot of times when they go to credits, then it becomes like, hey, now we got to push this shit in your face before we can even let this show end. But they should, because the music, again, the music and everything about that entire scene was just, it raptured me. Like, I wanted to live in that world, because it was like the visual look of it, the music, everything was spot on. And, it, you know, there's sometimes where they do things that are based in the 80s, especially, or some other decade, where it feels kind of forced. This feels very natural, very real. And, I mean, it almost feels like a show that was filmed in the 80s. Even the lead character kind of feels like the, you know, I don't know, like he has this 80s feel to him. Like he really is in that era. So anyway, I'm really happy to keep going with this show. So June 1st, AMC, I think it comes back in, I don't know if it's following Mad Men or taking its place this week, but not this week, actually next week, correct?
Yes, and it's going to be on a 10/9 Central.
Yeah.
And if you can, when you hear this podcast, I don't know if it's going to be up for very much longer, try to go to amctv.com and try to watch the sneak preview if you don't want to wait.
Yeah, and you don't have to sign in. There's no subscription necessary. It's free for everyone. They were really cool about that. And also really short commercial breaks just kind of featuring the show. So I thought that was nice that they didn't try to fill it into with much, you know, other junk. But anyway, right. Definitely go check it out. It's worth watching. And actually, this week is the mid-season finale of Mad Men. And then the week after, yeah, they'll definitely be taking their place on that 10/9 Central time slot. So just, you know, if you've been watching Mad Men, now you have something else to watch. So.
And by the way, no, it's not in our programming for tonight, but how have you been feeling about the season of Mad Men?
Started off a little shaky for me, but as it's gone on, it's been very interesting. And, you know, I thought it would be a little bit more bolder going into the last season, but maybe that would have been a misstep. I think they've been doing exactly what they needed to do with it. It's been an interesting journey following Don Draper. And there's something about it to me that makes me really happy to see, like, the guy trying, you know, trying to be a different person. Because he doesn't seem like he can be at times. However, I might just be, you know, it might be gearing me up to have my heart totally shattered by the finale because I've heard something happens that is unexpected. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I found the last episode to be like one of my favorite moments of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a really great show, and I'll be sad to see it go, but I won't have to see it go immediately. So
yeah, no, I agree.
All right. Well, moving on from that. So we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I think we maybe mentioned it again, and it was a part of the
what
section of our podcast. But we wanted to talk about it. We've actually pulled it out of that section, mind you. And I know some of you are like, what? Yes. And we're going to talk about it seriously for a change. But we're going to be talking about Jim and the Holograms. There were new casting announcements this week that were pretty significant. And a lot of people were joking that 1986 wanted their casting announcement back. But anyway, Molly Ringwald and Juliette Lewis have been added to the cast of Jim and the Holograms. Not really sure at this point which roles they will be playing.
Yeah, no, there is a reason why we pulled it out of the what. And I was, you know, when I saw this announcement, I started really thinking about it because I was like, wow, you know, it's a Jim and the Holograms movie. Yeah. And there has to be a reason why there's so much investment put into this. And it hit me. We, as guys, have gotten our Transformers. We've gotten our G.I. Joe. We've got our Avengers. So what is one Mattel-style property that could be turned into a female property? And that would be Jim and the Holograms.
Yeah.
So they get, you know, Molly Ringwald, Juliette Lewis. Molly Ringwald's like a darling of the 80s. Every girl that I know has probably seen Sweet 16, mm-hmm. or 16 Candles, or The Breakfast Club. And so they're going all out. They're going to make they're taking a risk to make a huge property focused at females with strong female characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, too, because we were talking about this before we started recording. When you think about properties for girls at that time and for adult women now, there's not a lot to go back to that would really carry into adulthood. Now, with a lot of the superhero properties, they were all kind of mature, you know, they had a certain vibe to them. You can do certain things to those to bring them to current audiences, you know, that are our age. But for a lot of the girl properties during that time, I mean, what was it? Garbage Pail Kids? Well, not Garbage Pail Kids. I mean, Cabbage Patch Kids. big difference, kind of. My Little Pony, Strawberry Shortcake, a variety of different programs. But and Barbie, of course. But, you know, with Barbie, Barbie's come under a lot of fire in recent history about being kind of like this typical idea of what men want to see out of a woman and really kind of anti-feminist. And you know, it's not something that a lot of people are afraid to touch that property, you know, just because and there's not really much to develop there. You know, it's about a doll, you know, who lives in Malibu dream houses and drives pink Corvettes. But with Jim and the Holograms, then it makes sense because it's like, oh, yeah, this was actually a show that was developed for women. And, you know, they can probably do some more with that. And the only other property I can think of outside of that that is still kind of a superhero property but definitely resonates with a lot of girls would be Sailor Moon, you know. So there isn't a lot of options there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, I mean, this is good waters to test. I mean, we'd like to see a Wonder Woman movie. We'd like to see a Black Widow movie. Uh-huh. So this is hopefully going to open the floodgates for that. Now, yeah. Just take a step back for a minute. Probably not going to go see Jim and the Holograms myself.
Yeah, I might.
It's just not my bag. Like, it takes a lot for me to go to the movies. It has to be, like, something I'm diehard about. To go to the theater. Now, that's not to say I won't watch it when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And it's like I told you on the phone, I could see a trailer and completely change my mind. I'm not unmovable. So sorry for all the coughing, guys. I got a little allergy thing going on. But Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great thing. I think that if this can do well and make over $100 million, hell yeah. Because yeah. I am kind of honestly tired of seeing dudes from Playgirl magazine throwing around a sword.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll be interested to see how it does. I think it's great that they're actually finally developing properties for women. You know, I mean, we haven't really talked about this in some part of the agenda, but, you know, Agent Carter got picked up for its, you know, episodes. Actually, we did talk about it in the last episode. But, you know, they're going to do 8 episodes, and it's going to come in between S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm excited about that because it's a strong female character that women really did love and connected to, you know, in Captain America in the first one. And with Black Widow and all these other franchises, and now that we're finally going to get a Wonder Woman on screen, you know, here in the next few years, it's a good time, you know, but I want to see that go further. And maybe this type of property has the ability to do that. And we may start seeing, because, you know, when you look at things that are targeted toward women right now, when you go to a movie, it's a lot of rom-coms and things that seem kind of very underdeveloped, you know.
Like glittery vampires?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it almost seems like they think women are stupid, you know, or they're all just like, you know, oh, you know, we just want to see some guy with his shirt off in the film, and we want the same damn storyline, like with that one with Cameron Diaz and Leslie Mann, that film that just came out like a couple of weekends. And it's basically the same movie that they've made for the last 30 years, and it's not changed. So hopefully they're getting away from that. And this may be, out of all the films, because, I mean, we just thought this was the most hysterical thing ever, but this may actually be the instigator to make that happen.
Right.
So, good on them. I'm all for that. All right. So, moving on from that, the next thing that we wanted to talk about, and we got a few of them to cover this week, so we have no intro for it, but this is, you know, trailers. hey, trailers?
what was the introduction you did earlier over the phone?
Oh, trailer park? I'm gonna go down to the trailer park. Yeah, pretty much.
You want green bean? I'll eat it.
Actually, when I think of trailer parks, I just think of people screaming at each other at the top of their lungs.
I actually heard the best quote. It was very, are you fucking me? But like a friend of mine had said it was like a 4-year-old next door, like they were talking to Comcast. I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, God. Well, we're not talking about those type of trailers this week. We're talking about the ones that are movies that are going to be of interest to us. We are starting off here. There was a brand new trailer that people were really excited to see. Film doesn't come out till August, so it's a nice little taste to kind of keep us through in the next few months. But, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. So, did you see the trailer?
I did.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I'm excited.
I liked it. I mean, it's a lot like the other trailer, but it showed a little bit more, you know, and that's all it really needed to do.
Yeah, more Rocket Raccoon, which is all I needed.
Groot spoke. Yeah. I am Groot. And yes, Rocket spoke a couple of times in it. And you got to see some of the more interesting characters that we hadn't seen before. We actually got our first look at Glenn Close in the film. You know, I mean, there was some cool stuff in it. And also getting to see Chris Pratt with the mask on for Star-Lord was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I could say about this except that August can't get here fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that needs to hurry up and come on.
Yep, I agree. So there's not much else to say about that except go see the trailer.
Or the movie when it comes out.
Yeah, or that.
And I caught another film that's getting you know, I've been reading a lot of articles this week. It's getting a lot of Oscar buzz, which is pretty unique considering it is May. Mm-hmm. And we're a while away from that type of season. But it's a movie called Foxcatcher, which is actually directed by the guy that did Moneyball and Capote. And that man, his name is Bennett Miller. He's a great character study type director. and he's doing Foxcatcher, and it's basically the true story of Olympic wrestling champion Mark Schultz, who decides to get justice after schizophrenic John DuPont of the DuPont company killed his brother, Olympic champion Dave Schultz.
Hmm.
Now, this movie's intriguing because this is Steve Carell in a way you never or ever probably will see Steve Carell again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's creepy in this trailer. Do you agree?
Yeah. At first, I thought he was doing his best Godfather impression. But as the trailer went on, because I honestly, anytime I think of Steve Carell, I'm thinking, okay, comedian, you know. But it actually, over the next few moments of watching that trailer, I began to really see that, no, okay, this isn't a typical role for him. This is actually maybe a game-changing role for him. It was incredibly creepy. Like, I've actually seen people out in the real world like that. And, you know, it's like, okay, so he definitely captured mental illness very well. But, yeah, he kind of gave me the creeps, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he does not look like him. I mean, you could tell it's him, but it doesn't, like, at first glance, you wouldn't think it was him.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of talk for this film, because this movie is already premiered at Cannes or Sundance, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talk for Channing Tatum getting nominated for this film as well. And he looks busted up.
Yeah.
In this trailer. I mean, this trailer almost reminds me of like Silence of the Lambs and Spots.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, there is an element of that. Well, I mean, I'm interested to see it because I'm actually going to read more about that story now because I don't think this film comes out until later in the summer or in the fall.
Yeah, I think it's the fall. I think you're right.
Yeah. So, looking forward to that. Did you have anything else to say about it, or
no? Check it out, guys.
Yep, check it out. The thing I wanted to talk about here in the trailer is that I just saw the trailer for. I never heard about it before. I heard about the trailer announcement. It's with Colin Firth, and it's called Kingsman: The Secret Service. So they just unleashed the trailer, and I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, it kind of looked cool. I saw a promo photo the other day that was like kind of like a spy's closet, you know, suits and special weapons and all these different spy gadgets, you know, so kind of like a setup that you would kind of expect, you know, like James Bond to have or whatever. But I was so intrigued by this trailer and just I was mesmerized because, you know, Colin Firth is kicking ass in the trailer. Like, the King speech is like all over the place, and you know, even Samuel Jackson is in the film too, which I was like, that's crazy. But it looks kind of like a film where they're trying to like train a new group of spies, so it has that kind of vibe of being a school atmosphere or like a Padawan kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, which typically those films kind of have a very kiddie vibe to them. I didn't get that from this. I thought this was just kind of cool and interesting.
Yeah, and something that you might not know from the trailer, this is actually a comic book.
Really? See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's by Mark Millar.
Okay.
Surprising. Considering you did Kick-Ass too. Yeah. But excuse me.
Go excuse yourself.
So, yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's Matthew Vaughn, and Matthew Vaughn and Mark Millar do some really good work together. Mm-hmm. So there it has that. It's just a cool trailer. Like, if you haven't seen it, like, it's definitely something different. Like, I don't even know how to put it. Like, you have to go watch it. Like, it's such a different approach to the spy genre.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, I'm just, like, stoked about it.
Well, he kind of reminded me of Mr. Steed from the Avengers. You know, all he was missing was his Emma Peel.
Yeah.
So I dug it. I really did. I'm excited to see it. I think it comes out October 23rd, which will be great. That'll be right around my birthday, so I'll be happy about that. But, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the comic is actually called The Secret Service. It's not called Kingsman, so.
Cool.
And we got one last trailer. Wanted to talk a little bit about this. It's called Life of Crime. Now, that sounds real bland and boring, but it's actually Elmore Leonard, who's one of my favorite authors. His prequel to his other book, Rum Punch, which has been adapted into a film called Jackie Brown, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. This is actually about the Robert De Niro and Samuel Jackson character before they went on to do what they did in that story. The basic premise of Life of Crime is that a rich man has his wife kidnapped, and for $1 million ransom, they'll give her back. But what he really wants to do is to get rid of her. He doesn't want her back and wants to spend the rest of his life with his mistress.
Yeah. And isn't, like, his wife played by Jennifer Aniston?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really cool people in this movie. I mean, you got, what's his name? The guy from Lost.
Oh, which character?
He played Benjamin Lydus's dad.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, but I don't know the name.
He's in it, and also, man, I just, like, lost everybody's name here.
Yeah, that's been happening to me all week.
The guy from Lost, his name is John Hawks, yeah. And it has Mos Def, Isla Fisher, Will Forte, and it also has Tim Robbins. That's who I was trying to remember. I couldn't remember for the life of me.
Cool.
So it's got a pretty strong cast. And also Mark Boone Jr., who a lot of people know from Sons of Anarchy. So I'm pretty excited about this. It's always good to see a decent Elmore Leonard adaptation. And hopefully this lives up to that.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't really know much about his books. I never even saw Jackie Brown. But I might catch up in that time because it sounds interesting. So, and I also kind of trust your recommendations as well, so.
But you know what that brings us to? What?
Yep.
So, this is like role reversal on this podcast tonight, because, like, Jurassic World was in, like, the beginning of the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and Jim and the Holograms would be in the slot, but they reversed this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jurassic World revealed some plot elements that are kind of questionable.
Or straight up stupid.
Yeah, yeah. This movie might be riding the short bus into the cinema. Mm-hmm. So basically the plot reveal was that there's a big bad dinosaur of epic proportions on the island or whatever. A Chris Pratt's character... controls the good dinosaurs to attack the big bad dinosaur.
Oh god.
And that happened on the podcast.
Well, you know, the thing is that when I heard that, I was like, did they like copy and paste some of the Beastmaster script into Jurassic World
or Dino Riders?
Oh god, what the hell are they thinking? That is the most moronic thing ever.
I don't think that they were. I'm really hoping this pans out better than it sounds, but if this has anything to do with the new movie, God help us all.
I mean, I guess you can train a dinosaur to do shit. You can train other animals to do stuff as well. Okay, get that. But to attack another creature, I mean, this might as well... Chris Pratt's character is essentially a prehistoric version of Michael Vick.
Yeah.
It's like, what were they thinking? This is not great. This is terrible. I mean, I'm with you. I hope that this ends up being good, even though that sounds ridiculous, but I don't understand how that's possible at this point. So,
cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
And with that, I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
My name is Al Nichols.
And you can find us at Straight Popcorn on Facebook, Straight Popcorn on Twitter. And we're also available in the Apple iTunes Store and Stitcher Radio. Thank you for coming. Keep popping.